ry.com. Thanks for listening.
Wings thanks Suki Westling and the Babblery for today's content. Thanks also to your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. Genevieve's event series can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Is autism an epidemic? Or is it a superpower? Are you a little bit on the spectrum? Or are you hashtag actually autistic? I'm Kerry Stewart Lingle, host of NeuroEmergent. Join me from 11 a.m. to noon on the fourth Wednesday of every month to explore neurodiversity in the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Right here on KBOO Community Radio.
Hello, I don't even know your name, but I'm hoping all the same, this is more than
Irish. You're listening to Radical Romance, and this is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, your host for the hour. This is the show of, by, and for people in open and polyamorous relationships. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So typically, I begin this program with some ethical, moral and ethical dilemmas from the New York Times ethicist, just to stimulate thought within you listeners and to encourage you to call in if you have thoughts about what you're hearing today. The phone number to call in is 503-231-8187, and I'm happy to take your calls. Please call with anything you have to say or ask about, and I'd appreciate it very much. Okay, meanwhile, let me get started on my first ethical dilemma. The title of this letter to the ethicist is, "When I was a child, I was sexually abused by my father. I never told anyone about it when it was happening. To this day, no one in my family is aware that the abuse occurred. My mother is still married to him, and he has a good relationship with most of our immediate and extended family. In adulthood, I've chosen to continue to keep his transgressions to myself. I have followed this path not only to avoid familial conflict, but to try to take containment to the damage he has done. If I were to share these details with my mother, I would risk destroying a decades-long marriage in a single conversation. If I were to tell my siblings, I'd do irrevocable damage to their relationship with our father. If I were to tell my mother, cousins, aunts, and uncles, you get the idea. Having this news would bring immense pain and sadness to the family and the people I love most in the world. If I keep my mouth shut, the hurt and harm he caused me will well, it's already stopped. If I spill, the whole family feels the pain. Here's her dilemma. So the ethicist responds with, I'm sorry about what you've gone through. There's something particularly dreadful about being harmed by someone who's supposed to have taken care of you. You're to be commended for addressing so thoughtfully the issues you face. Now, an immediate issue is whether your father could be in a position to repeat his crimes with other children. I know when I was in private practice, this was the law, at least in California, and I'm sure in most states, that if the offender has access to children currently, even if it's an event that happened years ago, if they have access to children they could harm, you must report. So anyway, I've gotten off track here, but finally, the ethicist goes on to say, which brings me to my final thought. Taking measures to protect your well-being isn't selfish when you are objectively the wrong and wounded party. Will your well-being be best protected by your admittedly painful policy of steering clear of both your father and the tumult of disclosure? That's the sense I get from your letter. But as a forecast, you'd be better in position than anyone else. Mainly, I'm glad you haven't had to bear this burden alone, that you've had the support of friends as well as a therapist to help you take stock of the past and think about the future. So that's the ethicist's response. And I know there are a lot of you listeners out there who may have been perpetrated upon as children, but it's never too late. Again, particularly if the offender has access to children, it's best to report. In every state I can think of, that's both the law and the ethical mandate, is to report anyone who is sexually offended. It's interesting, we have this in the news again with the whole Jeffrey Epstein scandal, and I won't even get into that orange-faced person in the Oval Office. So those are my thoughts on that. Next one is of a similar ilk, which is, my mom failed to warn me about an abuser. Should I tell my dad? And the writer goes on to say, I worked part-time for my granduncle's business when I was 13 and 14. There were many times when we were alone and he sexually abused me. I never raised it with my parents in those early years. I doubted I would be believed. And my granduncle was a, quote, kind old man, at least that's how he was perceived, who was very generous financially to my strained family. In my late 20s, while in therapy, I began to realize the impact of those experiences and what they had on me. I told my husband and my parents what happened those years ago. I received the essential support I needed from both my father and my husband, but my relationship with my mother became fraught. When I shared these events with her, she told me that the same man sexually abused her when she was a teenager and that she never told anyone. At first, we were angry about the impact on both of us, but then I became angry at her for not protecting me. How could she have possibly allowed her teenage daughter, me, meaning the writer, to regularly be alone with this perpetrator? She said it was because he was an old man when I worked for him, and she didn't think he would still do the same sorts of things. She also asked that I not share this information with my father, fearing that he would blame her for not protecting me. Well, she's got a point. Knowing that the truth might destroy their marriage, I have remained silent about my mother's experience and kept it as a secret at her request. I encouraged my mother to attend counseling to address this issue, but she has never done so, nor has she told my dad. I've lost a lot of respect for her over this. Her decision seems like a selfish one. I'm now in my 50s, my parents are in their 80s, and the secret is still buried. My dad continues to ask why I spend more time with him than with my mother. It clearly bothers him. I wonder if it's time to share the secret. Is unburdening myself this secret worth causing the disruption. The ethicist goes on to respond, I'm so sorry to hear about what you've endured. It clearly took courage to tell your family about what happened to you and to seek therapy to deal with its effect. Your mother's behavior, meanwhile, can only be heightened as your experience and your betrayal continues in your mind. In sorting through which methods of disclosure you might give some serious thought to your own betrayal. On the minus side, it could, as you say, derail your parents' six-decade marriage. Your father might resent not just your mother, but also you for having kept him in the dark. Another big question then is how much these developments would affect you in disclosing. Okay, listeners, call in if you have any comments about that. This seems like a common family dilemma when secret childhood abuse comes out in the relationship. Let me know your thoughts. 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Happy to take your calls. The last one to the ethicist is a little closer to home, for me at least, which is interesting. And I'm happy to share it with you. I'm a retired, married male psychiatrist. Recently, a divorced female former patient of mine contacted me after 45 years since our treatment ended. Would it be okay to correspond with her via email? This is a case of once a patient, always a patient. The ethicist responds, the relevant professional associations have strictures that are specifically about sexual relationships with former patients. The American Psychological Association has a crisp, narrow rule. Sexual activity with a current or former patient is unethical. The American Psychological Association forbids sexual contact with former patients for at least 2 years past the end of treatment. I remember that rule well. And in light of the potential for exploration within the therapist-patient relationship, these rules are meant to maintain clear boundaries regarding patient welfare, uphold the integrity of the profession, and eliminate any gray areas that could lead to ethical breaches. I have two personal comments on that. One is that even some of you who are patients out there of therapists know these ethical rules of the licensing bodies. I remember one time I had wrapped up the last session with a patient who was a very good-looking younger man, and he asked for a hug goodbye. I gave him a hug, and as he hugged me, he embraced and gave me a little kiss on the neck and said, I know about the two-year rule, LOL. I guess he was going to look me up in 2 more years and ask me out. I have no idea. I never heard from that person again. But another interesting dilemma, for me at least, was I did hear from a former female patient about 1 to 2 years after her treatment had ended, and she wanted to know if I wanted to get together for lunch. I'm a gay male. She was a young cis heterosexual woman, and so I took her up on the offer. I thought, there's never going to be a sexual relationship between me and this former patient. And we maintained a nice friendship up until I left Los Angeles. I still occasionally hear from her in texts, emails, or the occasional phone call, and I do consider her a friend, although our relationship was never sexual. I was even once her date to a wedding, which some of you may think is wacky, but I went along and we had a nice time. So if you want to judge me or let me have it, please give me a call, 503-231-8187. for befriending a former patient. Non-sexual, just friendship. That was the story. So those are my ethical dilemmas for the moment. I want to tell you all about a show I've been watching, which I've been enjoying, called Poly Family. I can't tell you what channel it's on. You'd have to look it up in your local cable or TV provider. But Poly Family is about two couples, both cisgender, hetero couples, male, female, married. They began the relationship in terms of a poly quad between the four of them, with two children already existing, and since then two more children have entered the family, and no one knows who the biological father is of these more recent two children, and now they're expecting the fifth, and they don't want to know who the biological father is. They like not knowing. So it's quite an interesting show to watch, and I don't know how they're going to sort it out. What I do remember from watching is that the women each have their own bedrooms. The men do not. They just rotate and swap rooms with the wives every night. So it's an entertaining show to watch. I do recommend it. You'll have to look for it. Poly Family, meaning two separate married couples with kids who joined together and became a poly quad. A poly quad is four individuals in a relationship together. I had heterosexual couples in my private practice in Los Angeles come in all the time telling me, you know, we wanted to seek out a gay male therapist because you people seem to have much more experience with open relationships, polyamorous ones, things like that. And that's why they always came to see me, just because I was a gay man and they thought I wouldn't react. They would always tell me, we went to see a nice female therapist on the West Side, one of those ladies who wears sweaters and floral print skirts and sandals. That's how they would describe her, even down to what she was wearing. But she became upset when we told her we wanted to open our marriage. So the reason why they said they all came to me was because I would not judge them for wanting to own their marriage. And I did not. Interestingly, I got invited to a few heterosexuals, quote, swingers events. They all considered it a, quote, swingers lifestyle. If you're out there and you are in a swingers lifestyle, please let me know. Please call in at 503-231-8187 and tell me all about it. I'd love to hear about it. The husbands on that show identified as straight. And meanwhile, one of the wives identified as pan, as pansexual, meaning just being attracted to the person. Forget about the equipment. Let me deal with the person. And they have fallen in love with a person. And I have a couple of friends that way. They are currently in a lesbian relationship, but one was still married to her husband with four kids at the time, went to a party, was introduced to her now wife, and fell in love with this person of the same gender, even though she had never had a same-sex relationship or experience even in her life. And they have lived happily ever after for 10 years now in what is ostensibly a lesbian relationship. I won't name names in case they're listening. I don't want to freak them out. They are friends of mine. I would love to hear your thoughts on pansexual attractions. And if any of you listeners have ever met a person at a social event and you just thought, I am crazy head over heels about this individual, and I don't give a damn what gender they happen to be and whether or not it's the same gender as I am. I had a house guest recently who was a younger pansexual man, the nephew of a friend of mine, and we had a hoot of a time, just so much fun during his visit. He came for a four-day weekend, told me all about his pansexual past and how right now he's seeing a woman. This woman has a boyfriend. And I suggested they just get together and the two guys hug it out and then see what she thinks about having their first three-way together. So those are the kinds of things I encourage. If you feel heartened by that encouragement, please let me know. 503-231-8187. That's the call room here. Please give me a call. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial, and this is Radical Romance, and I'm your host, Dr. Tony Zimbardi. Another topic that is of interest, because my own poly breakup occurred about a month ago, is poly breakups. I went online to do some research on Reddit about poly breakups, and interestingly, I found someone named Timothy Taco who wrote in that every Halloween, everyone in their polycule picks a stick basically out of a jar. It's basically the idea of getting the short stick versus the longer stick. They have different colors. Two reds are not a good thing. Two greens can be a good thing. And people who have reds have to keep picking until there are two reds, in which case they are both out of the polycule, or a red and a green, in which case the green gets to stay and the red is voted out. But I thought that was kind of a cold, compassionless way of whittling down a little polycule. Give me a call if you're curious about that circumstance, 503-231-8187. I am happy to listen to your thoughts and your opinions about everything I've said so far today. Other interesting things I found on Reddit were how to measure the success of your poly relationship. And they were similar for measuring success in monogamous relationships, which is how do you measure success of a relationship? Is it just longevity? Is it quality of life? Whether or not there are many fights in the relationship versus happy, romantic, intimate periods? I'm curious about hearing your thoughts on how to measure the success or failure of a relationship. Is it devoid of drama? For me, that's a personal favorite, low drama. As soon as drama enters the picture, I think everyone needs to take a step back and look at the situation. And is it devoid of jealousy? That can particularly come up in poly relationships, when maybe there's a primary couple who are adding partners into the situation. And can it be done so without jealousy rearing its ugly little green head? I'm curious about your thoughts around jealousy and drama. They can be nails in the coffin of any poly relationship. Lack of comparisons of partners, that's a positive thing. It's not good to compare one partner against the other or pit one partner against the other. Those are my thoughts on quality of poly relationships and how they can be measured. Same is true of open relationships. Lack of jealousy is a good thing. I think that's a hard thing. That would come up for me from time to time when I was a younger man in the past in open relationships. A little bit of jealousy. I remember that old TV commercial about the wife says, Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home. And I would have the same thought when I'd see my partner doing something sexually to a invited guest. Thinking, Terry never does that to me at home. Terry is a former partner of mine. no longer on planet Earth. So anyway, yes, devoid of jealousy, devoid of comparisons, devoid of drama. I think these are all ways to measure a poly relationship. But again, I'm waiting for your calls. Give me a call, 503-231-8187. Let me know how you have measured your own poly relationships in the past. What has worked, what has not worked. In terms of whittling them down or adding to them, I'm curious to hear the thoughts. Poly relationships are complicated, to say the least. And poly breakups even more challenging. I had shared with all of you that my own poly triad had come to an end a little over a month ago. I was in a relationship with two peers, one significantly older, I referred to as Ken Doll, and one my age, the human formerly known as Stanley, but whose name is actually Stuart. I wasn't very imaginative on the pseudonym on that one. The ST is all I needed, from Stanley to Stuart. I was rather lazy. But I'm ready for your thoughts. Quite interesting situations we humans can get ourselves into. I know certain species do mate for life, such as penguins. Penguins mate for life. There are also the bonobo chimpanzees, who are the only species that have sex just for fun and apparently masturbate just for fun as well. So if you want to be in an open relationship and have exhausted all of humanity, go join the bonobos and see what it's like. I think there's a store in downtown Portland called Bonobo. I think I've passed it several times. I have no idea what that store sells. But if you're curious, go check it out yourself. Meanwhile, if you have any thoughts on anything I have said so far today, please give me a buzz, 503-231-8187. That's a direct call into the control room here. My control room hostess today is Sherry, so you'll get to speak to Sherry if you can call in and give her a buzz and want to get patched through to me. I look forward to hearing from you all. Yes, oh, we do have a call. Go ahead, Sherry, put it through.
Hi there.
Hi, Arvy.
Hi, Doctor.
Hi, how are you?
I was interested in the jealousy part that you were talking about. I've had a three-way partnership, and it's interesting because the jealousy erupt and then we'll separate, and then I miss having the relationship.
Can you give me the whole rundown of what this looked like? Where were you in this little triad, and who were the other partners?
My wife and her boyfriend.
Okay, so I'm curious, how did that come about? Did your wife bring up the topic, or did you? That?
No, I brought it up. I've had a three-way partnership, but it wasn't in a marriage. It was in the polycon. Is that what it is? I was curious about that term. I've never heard that term before.
Say the term again. Was it polycule?
Yes. I've never heard that term before. I don't know what the definition is.
Oh, yeah, you can look it up on the internet. A polycule is just a little convenience of two to three or more people. There are triad polycules, quad polycules. Again, it's just the formation of two or three people.
Okay.
Who join into a relationship. And then they get to decide if it's a closed polycule, meaning basically monogamous to each other, no more fooling around on the side, or if it's an open polycule, in which case all bets are off. Anybody can fool around with anyone they like in their own time. Make sense?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we were at.
Okay, so you and your wife, but well, wait a minute, was this just the two of you in a, were either of you fooling around with anyone else?
Yeah, she has boyfriends, a lot of different boyfriends, and sometimes she admits it, sometimes she does not.
So how did she first bring it up with you?
Well, she introduced all my friends, and then we were hanging around the house, and she was a former dancer, and said, "Well, this, you know, how about if we try doing a dance? You want to dance?" And so that's how we got started with it.
So she was dancing with one of the men who was at your house.
Well, and the other boyfriend, the other male, he would buy her outfits. Lingerie,
which indicates maybe they were already having a little something going on.
Yeah, we've only been together since 2016, and before that, she's had several long-term people that she's been with for years. I've known this, been my friend for 30, 40 years and stuff. So,
how old are you all?
She's 68, and I am 73.
I love it. I thought you were kids when you first called, but you're not.
Oh, I was a kid when I first started.
Mm-hmm. So this is a long-term marriage?
Well, it's my third marriage. It's her first.
Interesting. So how old was she when she married you?
It's been almost 10 years ago, so 9 years ago that would be. So she must have been about 60, 61, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's born in 63, whatever that is.
I guess that makes her 62.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So she's 62 now? So 9 years ago she would have been 53?
Oh, no, she's 68 right now. So she would have been like 59, I guess.
Uh-huh. And how old were you at the time?
Oh, gosh. That would have been 8 years ago, so probably about 65, I guess. There's 11 years difference between us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have kids from your prior marriages?
I do. I have nine.
Nine kids?
Yeah, she's got four.
Wow.
We have no children together.
Wow, but that's like jumbo-sized yours, mine, and ours. Oh, my gosh, nine and four?
Yeah, there's a lot of complications with my second wife. I was her third husband, and she had two children by the last two guys, and she had four by the first guy.
And you and your current wife, between the two of you, have 13 children?
Yes, but we don't see them all.
I can't imagine how many grandchildren that equates to. How many? Do you know how many grandkids?
Actually, I think there's only about eight or five. A lot of the children don't want to have children.
Uh-huh. I guess that's a good thing. I don't know. But that's a lot of...
One of the things that's happened between 50 or when we got married in, 16, I went into the hospital, and I'm basically a eunuch now, and I think that's part of the whole poly part of it is he can do things that I can't.
I see. Did you have your prostate removed, or what happened?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Common in men.
And it was complications from that.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about getting a pump implant or some sort of implant?
I have thought about that. Because of the original surgery, I have an ileostomy and two necrostomies, and I have considered that, but I don't know if it's financially available.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd be surprised. Medicare even covers the penile implant.
Oh, I have to look into that then.
You really should. You should ask your doctor about it. Your urologist,
yeah.
Or get a referral to a urologist.
Yeah, I'll have to talk with her because I got an appointment with the urologist in a couple of weeks. I'll have to ask.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me your name again, sir.
Harvey, like the rabbit.
Oh, Harvey, right, right, right. Harvey, yeah, I got it, Harvey. Yes, makes sense. I like that name. There was a Harvey on that TV show, Suits. I used to watch that, and Harvey was the big boss. Yeah.
I think I don't know if I watched it or not. I've started watching it and haven't gotten back into it.
Yeah, great-looking man.
Yeah, that's
great-looking actor named Harvey, the character. But I do want to ask you a question. I'm curious.
And that's in Suits? That's in the series Suits?
Yes. The boss was named Harvey. So back to you.
Okay, I'll check that out.
I'm curious, Harvey. In all of your experiences with open and poly relationships, any same-sex encounters?
Well, I guess it would be kind of the same sex, but it was a three-way, call it a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
But not intentionally.
Without going into graphic detail, what happened? We have to keep it clean here. Remember, we're on the...
Oh, yeah. No worries. Well, we basically were drinking and stuff, and then one thing led to another, and we managed to do the experiment.
Mm. And what happened?
It was way younger.
Mm-hmm. Is this with your current wife or prior to her?
No, this is probably 40 years ago, maybe 50 years ago. I was in my 20s, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a period much more suited to those kind of encounters. But no same-sex experiences for you recently?
No.
No, okay.
We took turns with the wife.
I see. Okay. And she was happy to do that, your wife at the time?
She was happy. She was willing. I don't know about happy, but she was definitely willing.
Right.
The friend, which was interesting, he's been in the friendship relationship longer than I have. He told me one time, he said, well, have her smoke some weed and drink some alcohol and she'll do anything.
Well, it's true. Substances, they do lower our inhibitions.
What's that?
Substances do lower our inhibitions. They make all sorts of things possible that we didn't think were possible.
Yes. So that's how we got started. But she has kind of an experimental, likes to try new things kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And she part of her background too. She said that she's had seven stepdads over when she was growing up.
Wow. So there's a lot of multiple marriages running around in this story. What marriage number? Which marriage was that for you?
What's that?
Was that in your first marriage or second marriage?
That was the third marriage, the current one. Now, I'm picking up my wife now. Do you want me to ask her if she wants to talk or not?
Oh, I'm getting the signal from the control room that they're shaking their head no. Unless she wants to call in, she's welcome to call in on her own.
Okay.
Harvey, thanks for the call.
You're welcome, doctor.
Bye-bye. Well, he was an interesting caller. I enjoyed that. Oh, and we have Jeff on the line. Hey, Jeff.
Good morning, doctor. I, too, enjoyed that immensely. These stories, they verge right up against the border of the dirty books that I like. But I wanted to point out and ask you about your earlier positions and earlier statements about what binds together these relationships. And the two words I didn't hear, and I think may be important, and that I find myself barely capable of doing, mm-hmm. are communication and cooperation.
Yes.
It seems those are essential to any relationship, be it one-on-one or one-on-three. And I'm wondering where that fits in to broader poly relationships of communication and cooperation. We know jealousy is bad, but I believe communication and cooperation are the ways that we form strong bonds that sometimes last for a lifetime, unlike multiple marriages and multiple attempts to form some kind of union.
You're right. You hit the nail on the head, Jeff. You're a wise man. Yes, cooperation and communication.
It seems ever so difficult to do it just one-on-one, speaking personally. But it seems extra difficult for more than two persons to live in that way where they are in communication and they are practicing cooperation. And it seems essential, especially if there are children, which you opened the show with. And I really don't care much at all about your dogs and your kids, mm-hmm. because they're yours. And I am not impressed when you show off your dogs and your kids as to say, look at me, I'm a great human being. Mm-hmm. That may or may not be true. But mm-hmm. without cooperation and communication, that child that you so handily show, look my progeny, may not do well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be curious to find out the answer to that, Jeff, because my own oldest son, I have two adopted sons. I adopted with my now ex-husband, and they are in their early 20s. My older son is 23 and in the military, and he recently ran off to Vegas with his 20-year-old girlfriend, and they married. They eloped. So I'll be curious. And while I was with my ex, we had a poly-light relationship where at one point we each had our own boyfriend on the side. And even one time driving my boys to school, my older son said to me from the back seat in his little car seat, Papa, most married people don't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, do they? And that was kind of easy for me to answer. It caught me a little off guard at first, but he was letting me know that he was aware of what he had been seeing at home, which was I had an additional partner to his other dad, and his other dad had an additional partner in addition to me. And we would have a family dinner every Sunday night, in which case the four adults would rotate, taking turns every Sunday evening, who would make the dinner for the four adults and the two children. And then we would all sit down to eat, the four adults and the four kids, and we'd each have a Sunday meal together every week. That seemed like a traditional family thing to do. So I wanted to keep some traditions. And of course, we kept all the holiday traditions with Christmas stockings and such and decorating the tree as we raised our children, my now ex and I. And so I'll be curious to hear, now that these my kids are young men entering their mid-20s, what they thought of that whole scenario. Next time I speak to one of them, I'll ask. And if you happen to call back any time around then, I will let you know what the answers are. But yeah, I'm curious to think what my sons thought about our poly family, because I had a happy little gay poly family before these TV shows about the hetero poly families, like Poly Family, the TV show, came along in more recent days. So you bring up some relevant points, Jeff. I appreciate it. And
if I may, before I leave,
sure,
do some more self-expository recitation. And that is that I was born in 1963. I was conceived in 1962. I was conceived, I should say, my mother, and I know very little, my mother, according to all the records I know, is my mother, but her husband was not my father. So this was a relationship that was on the side. This was not poly in any way. I'm told that my mother's husband said, if you don't give this child up, I will divorce you. And in 1963, divorce was very déclassé.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I am, and there is a group called Bastard Nation. I am a bastard, and I will never know who these people are, never ever. And I'm not sure that I really care, but I hope that your adopted children have better luck at knowing who they are than I have had in my 62 years on planet Earth.
Me too. I appreciate that, Jeff.
Thank you, Doctor.
I appreciate your call. Thanks. It's always nice to hear from you.
Carry on.
Bye-bye. Sherry, any other callers?
Not at the moment.
Okay, no callers at the moment. I'll just get back to my own little poly triad and its devolution. So this past weekend, Stuart, Kendall, and myself had dinner at my place, and we all went to the Portland Youth Symphony Orchestra performance together, which was a lovely little start at building a friendship out of a little poly triad that fell apart. And we're working on Thanksgiving as well at this point. I'm one to believe that love never dies and that sense of family never dies. Once you feel that bond with someone or someones, that's the case. So I really see our friendship as one that is going to work out and last, as a friendship of three individuals who were once in a romantic sexual relationship who can now be friends. You can call me a cockeyed optimist, which I think is the name of an old song, but I am an optimist that the friendship will work out. Sometimes drama and jealousy can rear their ugly little heads in even the scenario of a friendship. So, but we're working on it. We're working on the people. And I look forward to it working out between the three of us. And Stuart and I are just 18 months apart, and Kendall is about 18, 19 years older than each of us. 18 years older than myself, 19 years older than Stuart. And Stuart and I really both see ourselves as being companions and caregivers to Kendall, who is 83, forever much longer he has on planet Earth. And we genuinely love this person that we were romantically involved with. And our plan is to stay by his side and share holidays together and create a little poly family of our own without the sex and romance at this point. So that's where the three of us are. So one more time, if any of you are curious about calling in or sharing or questioning your thoughts or asking about anything you'd like to, give me a ring. 503-231-8187 is the phone number for the control room here. Sherry will be happy to take your call and then patch you through to me. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi. You're listening to KBOO-FM 90.7. Radical Romance is the name of the show. You can also find us online if you go to kbu.galaxy.digital.com. You can find old episodes of this program, or you can listen live. Actually, I think all you need to do is type in kboo.fm, and you should be able to get the website and the show, and any of our shows here at KBOO FM. So please give us a shot. And this is the show for those of you who appreciate or who are engaged in or whom admire polyamorous or open relationships, radical romance. And the number of the control room here is 503-231-8187. Give me a call. I'm looking at Sherry in the control room right now, and she will screen your call and patch you through to me. So I covered a lot of ground myself. Oh, I think there was one ethical dilemma that was kind of interesting to me, and here we go. How did I skip this one? This was my favorite I wanted to read to you folks today, which is a contemporary issue that didn't quite happen in my day, because when I was in my 20s, cell phones hadn't come along yet. I don't mean to sound like a dinosaur, but anyway, the heading to this dilemma is, my date recorded us having sex without my consent. Should I report them? And here is the letter to the ethicist. I went on a date with someone, and we went back to their apartment. In the middle of the sex, I caught this person who uses they, them pronouns recording me on their phone. For my safety, I chose to pretend I did not notice, as I did not want to be stranded in the middle of the night. In the morning, I confronted them and they apologized and deleted the video. They said that it was their first time recording someone during sex and a spur-of-the-moment decision, albeit a bad one. When I arrived home, I felt more dehumanized than angry, as if I were just a sex toy. I told my friends what had happened, and they were very upset, and they urged me to file a police report. I dismissed it at first, but I looked online and found out that capturing an image of a person's private parts without their consent, when there is a reasonable expectation of privacy, is a violation of state and federal laws. Who knew? But good information to know. So don't go recording your partner during sex without their consent. The writer goes on to say, I decided to contact my date, inform them of the gravity of their actions, and told them never to do it again. I also decided that I didn't want to press charges. I did not want to subject myself to a lengthy legal process. Repeating and reliving this story over and over, as well as having to tell my family or put my life on hold. My friends are concerned that I don't feel upset enough about it, and they assume that it was not my date's first time recording someone and will most likely not be the last. They think I should file a police report. and date a normal human being instead of this stupid person who made a stupid decision. And I choose not to assume that the date is not a normal human being. By informing the date of the severity of their actions, they know now never to make this mistake again. Well, I'm not sure the ethicist completely and fully understands, but goes on to say, I understand why you're being pressured by your friends. They want to see justice done. An investigation should reveal whether there's a pattern of sexual criminal offenses here. But what strikes me is that your friends aren't acting like friends, giving priority to your own needs and interests. They're acting like strangers, focused on only what they think about what is best for the world. They want you to do something that has an unpredictable source chance of outcome, benefiting unknown others, but that would also cause you a great deal of stress and disrupt your life. Your obligations to others in the dating pool might be more substantial. If you were confident your date hadn't learned a lesson, but you have another perspective, and you're entitled to it. You have to decide for yourself whether or not to go to the police. Caring friends will support you if they do, but won't shame you if you don't. It's a very interesting dilemma. That's a sign of the times, is being secretly recorded during sex. It's never happened to me, but if it's happened to you and you want to tell your story, give a buzz. 503-231-8187. Please let me know your thoughts. That's a tough one. And yeah, that's a sign of the smartphone generation, is all the cameras and recording devices the newfangled phones have. I remember when I got my very first cell phone, it did practically nothing other than make a phone call. I see a signal that we may have a caller on the line. I'm not sure. Nope, we do not. If you want to squeeze in a quickie before I sign off, 503-231-8187. By quickie, I meant quick call, not the other thing that we talk about sometimes in this show. But my schedule's been thrown off, and I apologize, I haven't been here in a while. October was one of those odd months that had five Wednesdays. My show airs on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. So it's been too many weeks since I've been here, but I will be back again the day before Thanksgiving. And I look forward to speaking to you at that time. Meanwhile, this show for today is winding down. We've got very little time left, but if you want to give a quick call, 503-231-8187. Radical Romance, KBOO-FM, 90.7 on your dial. It's getting close to saying goodbye. Oh, we have Gilbert. We do have a last minute call. Gilbert, are you there?
I am here.
Hi there, Gilbert. What's happening?
Hey, I just wanted to weigh in on that conversation or the letter that was just written in.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened to me as a male where a female was recording me. But it was a conversation that we had initially. And I think people need to realize that those conversations need to be had in this time and age, that where there's a reasonable expectation of privacy. A lot of people do not have any respect for any other people in this world. So you just got to cover your own self and have conversations. And if they align with you, then they align with you. If not, then step away.
You're absolutely right, and I'm sorry that happened to you. Wow. So you were with a female who was secretly recording the two of you having sex?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Did you...
You know, and to be honest, with me, it didn't bother me. It didn't have an impact on me, sort of say, but it was one of those like, well, not the best idea, but okay, you know, we'll play along, see where this goes, but I can understand where it bothered this individual.
Yes. Oh, Gilbert, I'm sorry, but I hear them playing my theme music to sign off. Thank you for the call. Call in again sometime, please.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Portland Pollies, I will see you all, or talk to you all again the day before Thanksgiving, the fourth Wednesday of this month. Until then, happy playing. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Stay to see where this might go.
Oh, it's the last time I felt like this. I was falling in love.
Falling and feeling I'd never fall in love again.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation.